I am Reese Tisdale, and this is The Future of Water, in which we talk about all the ways which companies, utilities, and people are addressing the challenges and opportunities in water. This is episode 57 of The Future of Water podcast. Today, I'm joined once again by my colleague, Steph Aldock, as well as Isabel Kesman, and we're going to talk a little bit about private water and what's happening in the world of private water. But part of it will be defining what is private water, where's private participation happening, whether it be in the U.S. or globally, as well as who is leading the way. So without further ado, let's get to it. All right. So I'm joined here by Steph Aldock and Isabel Kesman. So Steph, how's it going?
Hey, Reese, it's going well. It's good to be in Boston this week, seeing the team and being in the office. So great to be here.
I mean, holy cow, it's about to dump probably 3 inches of rain, it looks like. So I guess welcome. And sorry you have to come for that. But coming from California, it's a good thing, maybe. Isabel, what's going on with you?
Nothing much. Glad to have some of the team in Boston.
Yeah, it's nice. So is I'll say at the end, but I'll say it now. If anybody, any listeners are out there, want to swing by our Boston office, we're right downtown. So we actually have clients coming in today. So we look forward to seeing them. With that being said, one of the topics that we've been kicking around, I think a couple of weeks ago, Steph and I were talking about Jackson and what's happening there, which kind of raised questions about private water. At the same time, I had gone to the NAWC conference in Florida, the National Association of Water Companies, which is really about private participation in water and water utilities specifically. And so as we were kicking around ideas and topic ideas about this podcast, private water was the topic. So because Steph was one of the proponents of the topic, we thought we'd turn it over to her and let her fire away with some questions to not only me, but also Isabel, who spends a lot of time looking at this. So why not pass it over to you, Steph?
Sure. So let's go ahead and jump in. Reese, let's start with you. We use the term private water a lot at Bluefield, but water is actually a public commodity. So I think it's worth clarifying, like, what do we actually mean when we say private water?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes there is confusion, but I think, you know, we've been pretty consistent about how at least Bluefield looks at it. But simply put, the municipal water sector, it's really managed by public entities like government, cities, or private companies, right? And so that could be a publicly traded company or just a privately owned company. For Bluefield, you know, private water really does include a range of, positions, whether it be utility ownership, includes public-private partnerships. You don't see a lot of those in the U.S. You really see a lot of those outside of the U.S., as well as contract operations. We roll up O&M, third-party contract operations, into private water and into our service. But it is worth noting just for context. I mean, I know we're going to talk a fair amount about the U.S. in this conversation, but really, you know, the UK and Chile are good examples of purely or fully privatized markets in which utilities are run by private companies. And they could, in fact, even be private equity backed as well. Whereas, you know, slightly different is our Brazil and France, which are really have a concessions play a bigger role in those markets. So companies like Saur or Veolia, Suez, of the world, they play a big role in that. And then, you know, and those are really based on like 25-year contracts. So they're not fully privatized. But with that being said, that's sort of how we look at it, municipal versus private, but also within the private, there's a slight range.
Okay, great. That's helpful. So let's focus on the U.S. for a bit. Just to set the scene, in terms of utility ownership, what percentage is private versus public? Like what part of the market are we talking about here?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked a fair amount about this, and basically, or approximately 15% of water systems, and water specifically, are privately owned, right? And that could be, you know, investor-owned utilities. So companies like American Water, Essential Utilities, California Water Services. There are also private community, you know, municipal utility-based type contracts that are ownership as well, which you see in places like Texas. And Isabel can definitely speak to that as well. But, you know, when we look at it, it's like 15%, It's actually a lot, you know, when you're looking at of water systems alone. There are 50,000 water systems in the U.S. 15% of those are privately owned. So, you know, that's a lot.
Reese, can I jump in?
Yeah.
Actually, about half are privately owned systems, but about 15% of the population, or 15% of the 300 million people that are served on these public systems are served by a private system, versus the split by systems is actually pretty even. But the when you look at it on a population level, that's when you get that 15%.
Yeah, no, that's good clarification, because there's a big difference when you look at sort of the number of systems themselves. So that's clear. I appreciate that, versus population served or connections.
So is that number growing? I mean, do you guys, is it stayed pretty steady that, you know, the share of private, or do we see that growing over time?
What do you think, Isabel?
So the private water landscape involves about two dozen pretty active investor-owned utilities. And so when we're talking about ownership transferring hands, we're really talking about usually these top IOUs making acquisitions, but they're really just rolling up. 70% or so of the deals are between private sellers and private buyers. So they're really just rolling up and consolidating within the private space already, more so than turning municipals into private systems. I mean, that does happen, but over the past 6 or so years that we've been following this, it's mostly private deals.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a great segue. I know there was a deal recently between Corix and Southwest Water, and Isabel, you put out a research note on that for our private water clients. But can you tell us a little bit about that deal? Like, what makes that specific deal significant?
Yeah, so this was actually huge news in the private water space, because it was two top 10 investor-owned utilities that are having a merger of equals, combining their systems, their water and wastewater systems under one ownership. Southwest sits at about a little over 2,000 connections, and we estimate that Corix is a little over or around 300,000 connections. So including some of the pending deals that Southwest has on the table, and Corix's, the combined entity is going to have somewhere over 500,000 connections, which brings them from separately being, you know, in the lower end of the top 10 into the top five, which is a massive move for both of them.
So just for clarification, 200,000 for Corix. Was it 200,000 for Corix, not 2,000?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. 200,000. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's interesting, though. I mean, those are big deals. Like, we saw Eversource a couple of years ago by Aquarian. So, you know, they're sort of big private deals, should I say. You know, they're the couple of those, and they're in a way platform deals. I think this is interesting also because strategically how they're positioned. So, you know, Corix is active in about 18 or so states across the U.S. with about, would you say, 200, 300,000 connections, whereas Southwest is far more consolidated geographically across seven states. And so it just shows you, so bringing them together, I think the total state footprint is going to be about 20 states plus Canada, Canadian provinces. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out over time. It's going to take the better part of 2 years, year and a half to 2 years to unfold at the regulatory level and go through all the paperwork. It's going to happen. I don't think there's any question about that. But then the question is, what happens in the aftermath? Now they're a top five player. Will there be some, what's a good word for it, harmonization maybe of their portfolio? Are there certain states that are just less attractive than others? But as a combined entity, they are a much bigger player now. I mean, they're twice the size, respectively.
Yeah, 20 states, that's a pretty big footprint. Are there been other notable private water deals this year that stand out to you guys?
I'd say NextEra breaking into the water space was pretty notable. They acquired 20 or so systems from Quadvest, who's a large investor-owned utility in Texas. And NextEra has been trying to break into the space for some time now. We've probably talked about it on the podcast before, but they got their Texas system. So we're probably going to see some build out in Texas. And they also just bid for a system in Pennsylvania for, what was it, Reese? $115 million was the purchase agreement price?
Yeah, that was, it got a lot of news. Actually, we were in Washington Post and Bloomberg as well, at least Bluefield was cited. Part of that was because NextEra had bid $115 million for the system, which I think put it at about $14,000 a connection, if I recall correctly. So it's pretty expensive on a per connection basis, but it was also pretty pricey compared to the second highest bidder, which was about $92 million. But, you know, that's a price that they've paid, obviously, to get into the Pennsylvania market, which is one of the more attractive markets in the U.S. for utility privatization.
Yeah, I think NextEra is a super interesting company. And Reese, you and I both come from the energy space. I mean, do you see other energy IOUs getting into water? Do you think that's a space to watch?
You know, I think it's definitely something to watch. You know, at the NAWC conference, there was a lot of discussion or some discussion about convergence between water and power, gas and power. I mean, Essential, who's also in Pennsylvania, they also own a gas utility, Peoples. We're seeing some of that, and I know there have been others looking at it. NW Natural is an obvious one we've talked about in the past. I mean, quite honestly, Algonquin, who owns Liberty Utilities, has power assets as well. If anything, you know, it may not necessarily be, you know, a power or a gas utility coming in to buy a water utility or vice versa. There's definitely going to be a convergence of systems and connectivity between the two. There really needs to be. And I say that partly because just the whole climate issue and how much energy the water sector, water utilities, including wastewater, use, but also vice versa. The power sector, the energy sector uses a lot of water as well. So there needs to be some demand side management when it comes to water and energy. So any connectivity on that front goes a long way.
For sure. Isabel, you mentioned Texas. I want to go back to that for a second. I know you put out a recent report on Texas, but why Texas? Like, is that market particularly attractive for private investment?
So since we've been following mergers and acquisitions in the private water space, approximately 1/4 of the deal flow has been in Texas since 2015. So we're seeing a lot of deals, a lot of approvals from the commissioners. And there's also about 10 investor-owned utilities competing in the space, which is definitely the cause of the deal flow. And we've had a lot of questions about the splits in terms of ownership and regionally the footprints of the different players. So we really wanted to break it down and see what the private participation, specifically in the water. We didn't look at wastewater because the majority of those M&A deals have been for water. So we took a deep dive in to the community water system landscape. Just to go in a bit more detail, there's over 4,000 community water systems. And of these, 37%, I want to say, are privately held, meaning they're owned by either one of these investor-owned utilities or a local utility, a mom and pop, someone like that. There's over 600 private owners in Texas. So just from those stats there, you can see there's a lot of room for consolidation, which is really the strategy that these IOUs are pushing. So we identified ownership across all of those privately owned community water systems and placed by county the footprint of each of the top 20 players, and also looked at just the percent of the types of systems. So are the private systems homeowners associations? Are they just standard residential? Are they mobile home parks? So we really covered a lot of ground in this report.
There's a really interesting exhibit that, you know, Isabel and others put together, and that was sort of county by county, you know, like what's the share, market share of private ownership within those counties? Because Texas has, what, 254 counties. So just looking at sort of the heat map is really interesting. It kind of gives you an idea where really all the activity is and where it's happening.
And are there other states that are particularly ripe for private investment besides Texas that you guys have your eyes on?
There's been a lot of interest in Pennsylvania just because their Aqua, American, now NextEra are competing in that space. And Interestingly, there's actually, I know I said earlier, most of the deals are private, but in Pennsylvania, there's actually a lot of municipalizations. And so Pennsylvania is getting a lot of news coverage right now in terms of private water, for good or for worse, but the space is right for IOUs, especially from a legislative perspective.
I mean, I think to that point, I think as far as big deals go, you mentioned, you know, notable private deals being NextEra, but another one that actually didn't happen, Isabel, was the Essential Utilities, who was Aqua American, the Bucks County deal that basically, which was, I think, a really big deal.
75,000 connections no longer going to Aqua. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was sort of in there in the docket for, you know, approval, but that didn't go through. And that was just a week or two ago. So there's definitely some pushback. And I think even the NextEra deal in Pennsylvania, there's definite pushback. I mean, I'd say, Steph, to your question, you know, what are key things that that firms look at? And this was really a takeaway from the NAWC conference. And that is, well, what's the policy landscape look like? Is there fair market value legislation? So that's obviously a big driver in Pennsylvania, really where it took off, but that's driving a lot in Texas. Are there small systems that can be rolled up and, you know, into existing footprints? I think that's a big part of Texas, obviously a big part of Pennsylvania. And then lastly, you know, it's kind of simple, right? You know, I've said this to you guys yesterday, deal flow begets deal flow. So if there's a lot of activity in a place like Pennsylvania, well, communities, they've heard of it, they know of it, as an option for system ownership. And so they're less, I don't know, maybe less threatened by private ownership. Whereas if you go to a state where there's very little activity, then there might be more resistance to private ownership of community systems.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about some of the players. I know, you know, companies like American Water come up a lot, but who do you guys see as the big movers or private water utilities to watch?
Well, obviously American and Aqua, some of the big guys at the front are making deals consistently. But interesting, Central States Water Resources, they got private equity backing, I want to say back in 2018 and started around 2014. And since 2018, they have been handling deals left and right. Of the 215 deals that closed in 2021, Central States had about 90. So they're really making up the chunk of the deal flow. But this doesn't necessarily mean they're pulling in the most connections of these deals. They're really rolling up small, usually distressed systems and trying to build a base that way versus someone like American is going in and they're after the big fish. They're really looking for the big deals, the clean systems, and also wastewater. A lot of larger players have started looking at wastewater to see in the areas where they're already operating water utilities, to kind of push economies of scale, maybe put people on the same billing system, cut costs that way, and also just expand their customer bases. But in terms of players, definitely Central States, NW Natural, NextEra, those diversified players that we were talking about earlier, they're pretty aggressive in the space because they're trying to build bases.
Yeah, I'm interested in what other diversified players besides NextEra, you know, start to look to water. Reese, were you going to add something?
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I know we talk a lot about Central States because, I mean, it was only a couple of years ago that we thought, you know, oh, they're just, you know, and I know the market as a whole is looking at Central States, say, oh, it's just, they're just buying small systems. Well, now they have a legitimate platform. While it's geographically diversified, nonetheless, they've added a lot of connections into their portfolio.
Yeah, we put them at about 200,000 connections.
Which is huge, right? In a short amount of time. I think the other, but and Isabel, you can speak more to this because you and others are looking at the dockets quarter to quarter. But I mean, even in like Global Water Resources in Arizona, there's definite activity that's happening from players that have been pretty quiet recently. And back to the Corex Southwest water deal, it'll be interesting to see what happens with them because I know the CEO of the to be combined organization is from Southwest, and they've been active in acquiring assets in different states, whereas Corex or Utilities Inc. have been really more quiet and sort of less active in the market. So, you know, there's deal flow that's happening. And then lastly, like I said, you know, another big deal was the Liberty Utilities buying American Water's assets in New York. I mean, that was a big, as far as connections go, that was a big jump.
Yeah, it definitely seems like lots of activity in the private water space. Reese, you mentioned NAWC. I think that's the largest conference of private water utilities in the U.S. I believe you were there last week. What were some takeaways? What was top of mind for those IOUs there?
Yeah, so I sat on a panel with the CEO of Essential Utilities and the COO of Corix, actually. And then, you know, there was a moderator from CNBC. And we were talking about, you know, what are the challenges? What does the market look like going forward? But, you know, obviously this conference or summit, they're really about consolidation. They're really about what's the role of private players in the water market. And some of the challenges are very similar to what everybody's facing, with that being municipal utilities, municipally owned. And that is like things like PFAS and lead and regulations and paying for this, right? You know, PFAS, there was an entire session on that, which is really interesting, and trying to figure out what is the impact going to be, because these companies, the investors, they have to go through rate cases. They are regulated in many respects more so than the municipally owned utilities. So that's a big concern of not only are they facing the regulations, but they also have to negotiate, you know, the rates that they're going to be able to charge their customers by their respective geographies. Another issue, which is probably not a surprise, and that is, you know, climate. Stormwater is a big issue that came up specifically. I know the CEO, Chris Franklin, at Essential was talking about just some of their systems over the past year or two being really inundated by these large storm events, so much so that they're having to shut them down to figure it out. And this is a common concern or question that's coming to us from all sides. And then lastly, there wasn't a lot of talk about it, but Steph, you and I've talked a fair amount about Jackson. And really the question about Jackson, and we have an entire state capital that doesn't have access to clean water, but is there a role for private players to step in? I mean, is that really what it's going to take? Because private players, not only are they regulated by the utility commissions within the states, but also they do have the stress of shareholders in many cases that are looking for not just returns, but they're held accountable in different ways. You could argue that's good or bad. But like I said, 15% of the U.S. is, as Bo was saying, you know, is served by private systems. So it's not like this is anything new. It's just sort of, it is an option and not always necessary, because as we talked about at the conference, that, you know, they're big systems like LEDWP or DC Water. That's not, no one's saying that they're doing a bad job. You know, with so many systems across the U.S., there needs to be some, I think, some consolidation, because so many systems are, don't have enough resources.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how Jackson plays out and what type of impact that has on privatization. I got one last question for you guys before I let you go. It seems like M&A overall in water's been down this year. That's my impression. And what about in the private water sector? I know you track that quarterly, Isabella. Are we seeing private water deals down, or are we still seeing, in, you know, deals throughout the year?
The private water deals seem to be on par with our historical data. 2021 was a really aggressive year, mostly because of central states having 90 deals on their own. But in terms of the private water deal flow, it's typical for what we've seen.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, I would say the M&A, I agree with you, Steph. It's been a little quiet, and we're about to go through our quarterly M&A analysis, just looking at deal flow. And I think a lot of that has just to do with market uncertainty. But to Isabel's point, the private water market has been pretty, you know, it hasn't been low relative to historical standards. It'll be interesting to see what happens in Q4, though, because that's usually one of the big quarters.
Awesome. Well, thanks, guys, for the time today. I know we've put out a lot in our private water service recently, so look forward to new insights as we go forward.
Yeah, I look forward to it. That's great. Thanks for jumping on, Steph and Isabel. This is fantastic.
Thanks.
All right, guys. We'll catch up later. All right. That was great to catch up with those guys and hopefully helpful to all the listeners out there. But before we sign off, if you are in Boston, let us know. We can set up a meeting at our relatively new location, just 10 minutes from the airport and 10 minutes from the train. Please subscribe to Future Water Podcast and give us a review, whether it be on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, or whatever platform you use. I appreciate those of you who have sent us notes of topic ideas. We actually received a really good one last week that's interesting. We'll work towards that. But send us a note to waterexperts@bluefieldresearch.com with any topic ideas you would like us to discuss. We're doing this for you, and tell a friend about it. That's all I got to say. This podcast and these water industry insights have been brought to you by the one and only Bluefield Research. To learn more about us, visit us at bluefieldresearch.com. Talk soon. Be well, be safe, and take care.